And good morning. This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Friday, February 26th. I'm Roz Brown. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio.
People can look out for us. We're on Facebook and Instagram. And if you're excited about having dinner in the Nook, you'd be able to follow us and see where we're at.
And some of the voices you'll be hearing this morning on the magazine. Some Boulder residents got a chance. This is what's coming up this morning. Boulder residents got a chance to quiz the two finalists for the position of Boulder City Manager last night. We'll learn what they shared about themselves and why they want the job. From Fort Collins today, two high school friends have teamed up to offer a unique pandemic dining experience. They share their story. Then, an icon of publishing and the Beat movement, Lawrence Ferlinghetti, died this week at the age of 101. Ann Waldman, Boulder poet and co-founder of the Jack Kerouac School at Naropa University, will share her thoughts about the unassuming but radical pioneer. At the bottom of the hour, Connections comes your way at 8:30 this morning with your host, Roger Wendell. His guest will be Parker McMullen Bushman, and they'll be talking about diversity, equity, and inclusion in the environmental movement. Then stay tuned at 9:30 for another morning of eclectic music with Meredith Carson until noon today here at KGNU. But first this morning, we'll start with headlines. New COVID-19 data out of the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment as of Thursday shows the 7-day moving average positivity rate decreased to 3.62%. At the same time, about 824,000 people have been vaccinated with one dose of the vaccine as of February 24th, and 411,000 have received two doses. Both vaccines currently authorized are about 95% effective and require two doses to achieve immunization. Colorado is approaching 6,000 deaths from COVID, with more than half among people over age 80. 24% are deaths occurring in people between the ages of 70 and 79, and 12% were in people ages 60 to 69. Boulder's Alfalfa's Market grocery store announced Thursday that it's closing, primarily due to a lack of foot traffic due to the pandemic. The company's flagship market at 1651 Broadway in downtown Boulder will begin a sale today and close next week depending on the outcome of the clearance. Alfalfa's president, Mark Homish, blamed COVID-19 for the bad news. He told the Daily Camera the store's cafe and prepared foods department had been shuttered since the start of the pandemic, and it mainly catered to preparing meals for Boulder High School, the University of Colorado, and various local businesses. That contributed about a third of the store's revenues in normal times and led to a drop in customer foot traffic by 60%. Homish said the store's remaining floor space wasn't enough to keep the store open. Alfalfa's has two other stores in Longmont and Louisville, and between 40 and 75 employees work at each store. Alfalfa's has been serving Boulder for more than 40 years and was first founded on Pearl Street in 1979. The University of Colorado has announced that the Conference on World Affairs will return virtually this year, scheduled for the first week of April. The popular free event featuring panel discussions among experts in international affairs and other areas, along with Q&A from the audience, was canceled last year, mostly, but for five events addressing the pandemic. KGNU's Steve Miller has more on how the event will look this year.
The Conference on World Affairs returns virtually in its 73rd year with a 7-day lineup of live-streamed events, April 5th through April 11th. The 2021 conference will host 29 events in total, 7 performances, and 22 panel discussions. The event will feature dialogue on several topics, including this year's conference themes, racism in the U.S., healthcare, and Generation Z. More than 80 speakers representing 12 countries will join the 2021 conference. Participants include activists, artists, political experts, scientists, and more. Notable names attending the 2021 conference include Christian Picciolini, founder of the Free Radicals Project, Daniel Hahn, the first black police chief in Sacramento, California, and Michelle Gavin, senior fellow for African Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations and former United States ambassador to Botswana. Visit the CW website for a complete list of speakers. Sessions will be held via Zoom and live streamed to the CWA YouTube channel. Notable past participants since 1948 have been Eleanor Roosevelt, Buckminster Fuller, Harry Belafonte, Ralph Nader, and 2021's inaugural Youth Poet Laureate of the United States, Amanda Gorman. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
A new report suggests Colorado's medical aid in dying law, passed in 2016, is working as intended by helping qualified terminally ill residents end their suffering. Sam DeWitt with the group Compassion and Choices notes data collected by the state's Department of Public Health and Environment shows more physicians are making terminally ill Coloradans aware of their end-of-life options. He adds many patients report that just having the prescription gives them peace of mind.
So much of the life of a terminally ill person comes down to the daily pain and the unknown. And having just that one item that they control, they know when they get to take it, is extremely empowering.
The End of Life Options Act authorizes mentally fit adults with 6 months or less to live the option to request medication that they can choose to take if their suffering becomes unbearable. In honor of 2021's Black History Month, the Colorado Chautauqua has honored Black entrepreneur Oliver Toussaint Jackson, typically known as O.T. Jackson, by hanging framed photos of Jackson at the entrance of the Chautauqua Dining Hall on Baseline Road. Jackson supervised a staff of 75 there back in 1898. FYI, Boulder set a record for snowfall this week with the latest storm. The storm in total delivered 8.2 inches of snow to Boulder, breaking the old record for February 25th of 5.9 inches back in 2002. Weather along the Front Range today, cloudy skies and a high of 41, dipping down to 24 tonight, then 35 for a daytime high tomorrow, but cold tomorrow night with a low of 14, high of 37 on Sunday. It's 26 degrees outside our Boulder studios. You're listening to the Boulder Magazine on KGNU. Boulder is getting ready to hire a new city manager, and that's a significant position because Boulder has a council-manager form of government where city council sets policies and the council-appointed city manager administers them. There are two finalists for the job, and they participated in a virtual meeting last night to introduce themselves and answer questions. We can't share the full 45-minute presentation from each of the candidates, but here's how Nuria Rivera Vandermeer introduced herself. She is currently the deputy city manager in Austin, Texas.
I come to government and public service genuinely. I'm an attorney by profession and came to really realize a love for public service in an unlikely place in corrections in Puerto Rico, which is where I'm from originally, and really discovered there the power of organizational change that kind of stuck with me and really made me think about government in a different way and how close we are to really improving quality of life for those that we serve. I remained in different capacities in Puerto Rico for a while and married into Minneapolis. So I left my lovely sunny beach and went off to Minneapolis, where I eventually became in public service. I continue to work in Puerto Rico as an entrepreneur, but as a late mom, I decided I needed to set some roots down in a city professionally and began working in the city of Minneapolis, where I started with a department that needed organizational change. It needed leadership. Its workforce had been really broken down. I was the fifth leader in 3 years, and there were just some things in that department that needed, quite frankly, tending to. There was healing, there was mending, there was a transformation of a department into one that was more community focused and community oriented. I was really excited there to be able to do things sort of broader, worked on engaging in a racial equity action plan, worked on minimum wage, worked on supplier diversity, a variety of projects that I really think were compelling to me personally, but really focused on that love I have of serving community. I didn't know at the time when I was there that the city manager before me or the city coordinator before me would somehow convince me to come down to Austin in a different capacity and as deputy. But the challenge of working with somebody I admire and who was working on similar issues, homelessness, public safety reform, professionalizing and lifting up the work that city government does in ways that really get closer to community, data focused and really thinking through about governance in really innovative ways. It was all here in a bigger city. And I will confess that while I was not looking to leave Austin, Boulder on a personal level was a city that my husband and I visited once and fell in love and continued to say and visit and think that this is a place that we would love to live if we got an opportunity that fit our world. And this opportunity came sooner than I anticipated, but I am excited to be considered. I am excited to lend my voice to this community and my experience. And I hope as we get to talk to each other that we'll learn more about what the needs and what the expectations and what the desires of community for and the vision of community for Boulder is.
Again, that was Nuria Rivera Vandermeed, one of two applicants for the job of Boulder City Manager. The second applicant who made a virtual presentation to residents last night was Kevin Jackson, Deputy City Manager in Long Beach, California. Here's how Jackson introduced himself.
I'd like to just share for a few minutes some information about my background. I'm proud of the fact that I've accumulated a substantial amount of experience in local government, nearly 24 years in local government, and I started my career at an entry-level position providing direct service, and I've worked my way up to the highest level in city government. And so I have had substantial experience at the direct service level, substantial experience at the mid-management level, and the last 13 years of my career I've spent at a senior executive level, 9 years as an executive department head, and the last nearly 4 years as a deputy city manager here in Long Beach. I'm also proud of the fact that my experience is broad and diverse. I had experience in almost every aspect of city government, and all of my experience has been in a council manager form of government. I've had experience in housing, substantial experience in human services, neighborhood development, transportation and infrastructure, water quality, sustainability, parks and open space, and I've had some unique experiences with operationalizing equity into city service delivery. And so there's been a variety of things that I've had an opportunity to get my hands on over the last 24 years. And I'm excited to be in a position to move forward and share all of those unique experiences with an amazing city like Boulder. The thing that's actually attracted me to this opportunity is the bold vision that Boulder has for its future. It's really exciting to think about the opportunity of providing leadership in a community that is interested in integrating the principles of sustainability, resilience, as well as equity, and operationalizing those principles, and I would say also institutionalizing those principles into city service delivery. And it's a bold vision, and with all the experience that I've accumulated over the years in local government, I'm looking for an opportunity to become a city manager in a community like this with a bold vision to help this community move forward. I believe that it's an exciting time for Boulder and having a vision like this, and I think that this is also an exciting time for America to be able to provide an example for America on issues of sustainability, resilience, and equity.
Again, that was Kevin Jackson, one of two administrators under consideration for the job of Boulder City Manager. Boulder City Council will decide between the two applicants, one of which will replace Jane Brodigam, who served for 12 years as Boulder City Manager before retiring last October. Both applicants had a lot of information about their positions regarding policing, homelessness, and other topics. So if you'd like to hear the full interviews, go to the City of Boulder website at bouldercolorado.gov. It's 17 minutes after 8 o'clock. Colorado restaurants have been very innovative during the pandemic when it comes to serving their customers, from picnic tables in the streets to tents to mini yurts and heated greenhouses. But in Fort Collins, a pair of childhood friends had another idea for a pandemic-related dining dilemma.
We grew up in Old Town Fort Collins, just like, I don't know, 8 blocks from each other. So Sean's parents are like my parents. My parents are his second set of parents. We've known each other since kindergarten and gotten ourselves into, I would say, some trouble when we were younger and some fun projects like this now that we're, you know, in our 20s.
That's Seth Pearson describing his business venture with Sean Hudgens.
So my girlfriend and I went out to eat at a restaurant here in Fort Collins called The Regional, and they had, you know, a pretty cool little converted camper trailer that they were using as a COVID-safe dining experience. And eating in there, I kind of had this idea that this should be something that was available to every restaurant in northern Colorado.
Looking around, Hudgens thought maybe a lot of restaurants, instead of throwing up temporary structures for dining during the pandemic, would opt for a more cozy outdoor dining option for their customers.
I was getting really excited about the way that they converted it and started thinking about how I would do it in a way that could be rented out to all kinds of restaurants.
With business skills rather than cooking skills, Hudgens says he and Pearson purchased an 80-square-foot trailer and created an insulated, heated, and modern table for six with Bluetooth speakers to provide the proper atmosphere. The mobile dining room is now traveling from one restaurant to another. They decided to call it The Nook.
We're renting it to restaurants, and they're providing the food and the experience. We're just providing the trailer.
Hudgens sees The Nook as a non-permanent option for restaurants looking to offer a warm, COVID-safe dining space for single parties.
Currently, we're at the Creperie, La Creperie here in Fort Collins. You know, you'd be able to go enjoy a meal at La Creperie and experience all that they have to offer in a safe, secluded environment with just you and your party.
Hudgens says the whole process took just under a month, and it took even less time for restaurants to agree it just might work.
We've had a ton of good response on both sides. You know, originally we were having to reach out to restaurants to explain what we're doing, and we're just starting to round the corner where we're having restaurants reach back out to us, which is amazing. And the feedback we've had from people eating in the trailer has just been absolutely incredible. We had a patron reach out this morning who's at La Crepe at the moment just saying that they loved the experience. Obviously, they love the food because it's incredible there, but they were really excited about the experience and excited about where it's going next. We've got Stuffed Burger Bar for the end of the week and Blue Agave over the weekend, and both of them have been booking out reservations for The Nook. Even before we started advertising that we were partnering, we're having people call trying to get a hold of this thing at the restaurant. So it's looking like it's going to be a really popular dining experience.
Neither Hudgens nor Pierce is sure if The Nook will continue after restaurants open up to 100%.
I'd love to essentially work ourselves out of a job. I think it'd be amazing if we could go back to the old normal to a certain degree. And there might be less of a demand, but we're excited to serve the demand as long as it continues. We provide an experience that you don't get at any restaurant really at all. You know, it's a private dining experience. It's secluded and safe right now, but I think, you know, in the future, people might be excited about having an intimate dinner with their friends and family in a setting where they're not in a crowded restaurant environment, if that's something that they're more excited about. And, you know, obviously, I think there's going to be some public sentiment. Some people are already ready to go back to the old normal and be eating at restaurants and drinking at bars right now. And then there's some people who I think, you know, maybe even after being vaccinated and after things start going back, I think it'll take a while for those people to feel comfortable. So we'd love to be able to continue providing a good experience for those people and really open up, you know, in-person dining to everybody for as long as that's needed.
Are you headed to Northern Colorado this weekend, but nervous about eating out? Pearson says The Nook could be your answer.
I think the most fun part about our business model, and probably part of the reason that it's gotten so much attention, is there's two audiences to it, because restaurants are hurting right now for business because they have limited seating. So they're eager to have extra space and availability to bring people in. And then on the consumer side is not truly our customers, but those are the end users. And for them to go to the restaurants with the pull and to want to experience different places means that we get to sit in this world between the two audiences. And that's been a blast, you know, to have the consumer side and the restaurant side both excited about it. And I think that's the reason that we've seen so much public support for it, is that it helps restaurants and it helps folks that haven't been able to get out and go dining for the last 12 months.
If you're intrigued, you can follow The Nook and find out which restaurant in Northern Colorado it's headed to next, so you can make a reservation. Follow them on Instagram at Nook_dining or on Facebook. You're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU.
Support comes from Centennial Peaks Hospital, offering help for listeners or their loved ones who may be experiencing a mental health crisis. Inpatient and outpatient services available from a medical staff of independent practitioners. ECT available for treatment-resistant conditions. Details at CentennialPeaks.com.
It's 8:23 here on this Friday, The Morning Magazine. Well, bookstores are the lifeblood of most communities, and on the West Coast, none more so than City Lights, a tiny little shop in San Francisco's North Beach. But the proprietor of that tiny shop was nonetheless bigger than life.
I didn't get much sleep last night thinking about underwear. Underwear is something we all have to deal with. Everyone wears some kind of underwear. Even Indians wear underwear. Even Cubans wear underwear. The Pope wears underwear, I hope.
Lawrence was always such an anarchist in many ways, and he supported all these extraordinary other kinds of causes and just set out to do his own thing.
Boulder poet Ann Waldman with Naropa University says Lawrence Ferlinghetti was still doing his own thing when he died on Monday, a month shy of his 102nd birthday. An American poet and artist, he was equally famous as the owner of the San Francisco bookstore City Lights. Waldman was a young poet when she caught the attention of Ferlinghetti.
He published an early book of mine, it was 74 or 5, The Fast Speaking Woman, which was in debt to one of the great poets of the 20th century, Maria Sabina, the Mazatec indigenous shaman who lived outside of Oaxaca in her little milpa, barefoot, no education, one of the great oral poets of the last century, and he knew of her work.
They are the same people. We are the same people, only further from home. On freeways, 50 lanes wide. On a concrete continent, spaced with bland billboards, illustrating imbecile illusions of happiness. The scene shows fewer tumbrels, but more strung-out citizens in painted cars. And they have strange license plates and engines that devour America.
Born in Yonkers, New York in 1919, Ferlinghetti had a difficult childhood, but earned a master's degree in English literature from Columbia University, and then moved to San Francisco in 1951 before opening City Lights in 1953, a beacon of the counterculture.
Becoming, you know, this quintessential bohemian. But I just love him as this outside the mainstream and doing it with such passion, conviction. It was so smart to set up City Lights, of course, the first paperback bookstore. I mean, people forget that paperback bookstore in the country. You know, just such a brilliant idea, a paperback bookstore in North Beach. So that, which has survived through thick and thin, and when I consider all the things he was engaged with, you know, politically, of course, going to Cuba, I think in the 60s, going to maybe Nicaragua around the same time, but decades later, being supportive there of the Sandinista revolution and so on, just, you know, and his work infused with his vision and politics and his extraordinary, you know, the accessibility of his work seemed very important. And I think Coney Island of the Mind is still the best-selling book of poetry ever.
The world is a beautiful place to be born into. If you don't mind happiness not always being so very much fun.
As a bookstore owner, Ferlinghetti was able to release books by beat legends Jack Kerouac and William S. Burroughs. And it also got him arrested at the age of 38 for publishing Allen Ginsberg's counterculture manifesto, Howl.
His loyalty to Allen during the trial, where the, you know, finally Howl was declared a work of literature, not a work of pornography or obscenity or whatever the charge was, obscenity. You know, through his own poetry and the publishing of, you know, a lot of these early folk, from Frank O'Hara to Allen Ginsberg to Jack Kerouac, all within this, what's it called, the Pocket Poet series. That's really how things sort of started in the publishing. You know, that those became accessible books around the world. And always generous, inquisitive, good memory around the, you know, his long, extraordinary life. This is a landmark life, really.
Later, Ginsberg and Waldman would co-found the Jack Kerouac School of Disembodied Poetics at Naropa, and Ferlinghetti sometimes visited Boulder to hang out with the two of them, always attracted to the artistic and the avant-garde. But always a poet first, Ferlinghetti once said, "Poetry must be capable of answering the challenge of apocalyptic times, even if this means sounding apocalyptic."
Pity the nation whose people are sheep, and whose shepherds mislead them. Pity the nation whose leaders are liars, whose sages are silenced, and whose bigots haunt the airwaves. Pity the nation that knows no other language but its own, and no other culture but its own. Pity the nation whose breath is money, and sleeps the sleep of the too well fed. Pity the nation. Oh, pity the people who will allow their rights to erode and their freedoms to be washed away. My country, tears of thee, sweet land of liberty.
Lawrence Ferlinghetti, the owner of City Lights and a poet and artist, died this week at the age of 101.
This program is supported by you, the KGNU listener member, and by the Boulder Chamber. The Boulder Chamber strives to build community through business and help their member businesses and organizations grow while advocating for an economy that sustains Boulder for those who live and work here. More information at boulderchamber.com.
On the next alternative radio, hear Eddie Claude Jr. and Cornel West on the legacy of James Baldwin. That's Alternative Radio, Wednesday evenings at 6, right here on Community Radio, KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins.
Thank you for joining us here on the Morning Magazine this Friday. Up next, Roger Wendell is in with Connections.